So, like, we shouldn't get, like, as much traffic by the door during recording.
That'd be good. You're easily distracted during the podcast.
Wow.
The number of times where the podcast goes, when our podcast goes dead, I have to, like, check my phone to see, did I pause it by accident? Or then it'll just be you stopping to listen. You're like, do you hear that? The dogs?
In my defense, I'm a snoop. And I listen to conversations outside my apartment. Not like purposefully, but some people are loud and the walls are a little thin in the hallway. So if I hear things, I listen.
Star Wars. Transformers. Godzilla. Animation. Whatever else. Rebels. Robots, and etc.
If podcasts need instructions, that's you listen. Well, it's Starformerzilla Mation Night. I want to start that again. It's Starformers Night. Boo! You stepped on my intro. It's Starformers Night. Welcome to Rebels and Robots and etc. Episode 70. Nice. I remembered the episode number this week.
Wow!
I'm Cameron.
I'm Rachel.
And this is our bi-weekly chat about Star Wars and...
Transformers.
And whatever else we want to talk about!
Bird movies.
No! Though Caleb really, really wanted it. I talked to him on the phone this last week. He's all about it. But we are talking about Skeleton Crew episode 3 and 4. But before we get to that, as always, we've got news and recent thoughts. Rachel, what are the hot headlines this week? What's
I only have one thing of news. And it's not even news.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. All right. It's not even like news. It's just kind of like something that's cropped up in like the Transformers fandom.
Oh no.
So, for context, have you heard of Spider-Man Lotus, the canceled fan movie?
Did they not make it?
Well, they made it, and then the creators turned out to be have questionable opinions about groups of people.
Yeah,
the term
this.
I'm looking for is racist.
The term you're looking for is based. No, I'm kidding.
So
that joke was for Caleb.
So that provides the context for what I'm about to say. So for the last 10 years, this group of people have been working on a fan continuation of Transformers Prime, like a fan movie called Galvatron's Revenge, creating the assets themselves and continuing the story. I haven't watched it. I refuse. Unless unless someone pirates it and uploads it somewhere else, I will not support the creators because it's essentially Spider-Man Lotus. What happened with them? Like the movie came out, and it's just horribly like, like the creators are like super racist and sexist, which is wild. Like,
someone's gonna have to do some research on this. What seems to be the strong connection between obsessive fandom extreme fandom people and having extreme prejudice. This seems to be a pretty consistent thing that we see in this world. Anyways, so
it's bad. I've seen like some clips and it's...
What was the title?
Don't give them the internet.
I want to...
It's called a Galvatron's Revenge. Why are you laughing?
It sucks. That's a crappy title. I just wanted to see some images. Also, I'm sorry if you mentioned this. It's in the style of like Transformers Prime.
I did say that.
Okay, I'm sorry. I missed that.
Athena, please clip in the clip where I said this was specifically a fan-made film continuation from Transformers Prime.
File not found.
You're not the editor.
You said a continuation, but you didn't necessarily say it's directly in the style of, per se.
It is, yes. What did you Google? If you're looking at Robots in Disguise, it is actually the canon continuation, not the same style.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's the style of Transformers Prime, but the animation quality
extremely unrendered.
Beast Wars.
So, no, because Cameron, someone commented that Beast Wars has better animation than this. This took 10 years and $8,000.
Oh, then yeah,
Cameron,
it does.
This took 10 years and $8,000.
Beast Wars does look better. Wow, that's rough, buddy.
So it's a little bad. It's also... I'm looking at Athena as the fellow woman in the room. It just sucks because they entirely reduced RC down to her looks. It's just super derogative. Blech! Hate it.
Anyway,
with that clip from Top Gear. Oh no. Anyways, but so that's kind of taken Twitter and the internet by storm because everyone's like, oh no. Because I remember seeing like years ago when like the creator was like, yeah, we're gonna start this fan project, mm-hmm. and like the assets looked good. And then
what happened to you?
And then you talk.
Look how old you've become.
My favorite comment was someone posted a picture, like the title from Robots in Disguise, and said, "Perhaps I treated you too harshly." So it's just I have a friend who watched through like 6 minutes of it before she quit.
yikes!
And so she's like, "I'll finish it," and we were like, "You don't have to. Like you can. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that for anyone's sake." So it's just, it's a little rough. Actually, no, it's a lot of rough. I'm not saying, I don't want to mince words. It sucks.
Uh-huh.
I just, 10 years and $8,000. That's, I want to know how long it's been rendering. Like maybe 8 of those years have been rendering because obviously they rendered it on like a MacBook Air or something. Anyway, so it's been kind of interesting. I think the other piece of news that I have is that there is a game coming out, Transformers Reactivate.
Okay.
That I think has been canceled. I'm not going to lie. So here's the thing. I'm super confused because it came, I think, right about the same time as this Galvatron's Revenge thing. Let me Google it real quick. I didn't write it down.
None of the headlines are showing that it's been canceled. There's like headlines from 5 days ago with leaked gameplay. Doesn't seem to be a ton of information either way.
It's weird because I feel like I'm missing half of a conversation. Okay, so allegedly it's been delayed, but okay, that's what it is. Sorry, sometimes I get on Twitter and I'm really confused about the drama that overlaps. So basically, Transformers Reactivate, there's been absolutely like zero word from the developers about anything for like months. I see. So I think it's been kind of a, I guess we're probably not going to see that. Anyways, very dark, very, very dark time for Transformers fans right about now. So,
well, on the Star Wars side of things, I have two very amusing headlines that are just, they're great as just the headlines. One I just found a second ago by Google searching Star Wars and doing news. This headline is, Star Wars themed love letter torpedoed former Seattle police chief's career. I don't know any more information. I don't want any more information, but when you see Star Wars themed love letter, that definitely is an unlikely start to a headline that's got nothing to do with Star Wars. But then the fact that it's followed up by torpedo to former Seattle police chief's career is it's good.
So I misheard you because I didn't hear the police chief's part.
Uh-huh.
And I heard Chiefs player and I was like, gosh, please anything to keep them out of the Super Bowl.
No, headline more directly related to Star Wars. I just love how, I'll read it, and then I think the humor of it will be self-evident, but we'll talk about it for just a second. Pedro Pascal was possibly present on the Mandalorian and Grogu set.
Ooh, yikes.
That is...
Just hire someone else.
The fact that the actor who plays the titular character of a film, that it's newsworthy that they might... have been on the set.
That is insane.
Is so such a indictment of where the Mandalorian has ended up, at least in relationship to the to Pedro Pascal.
Yeah,
it's, and I read the headline. It was a nothing article because all it was, I don't remember who, someone else related to the movie, tweeted about, like posted an Instagram post about it and tagged Pedro Pascal in it, which doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean he was on set.
So bad headline, but also very funny. The transition into talking about Skeleton Crew.
Good thing. I was just gonna say, good thing he has like a he has like multiple body doubles, because can you imagine if they just had like an empty suit, like Weekend at Bernie style for this movie? With the Mandalorian. Someone's like carrying him around the whole time. Uh-huh. He's injured. Oh no. You can't see his face because he's sleeping.
Before we watched episode 3, I watched episode 1 and 2 with Allison. It was her first time watching it. Rewatched for me. And
she didn't watch the first two with us? Yes, she did.
No, she was doing homework.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. She was in the room with us, though. That's why I was confused.
And as the kids were going through the ship, like looking at the pirates and how their clothes were so different and that they were really dusty and they'd clearly been on there for a long time. And there was some other clue. And then this all made me start to consider how long that ship had been crashed.
Yeah.
And then that caused me to start to reevaluate the Aldani's a sulfurous bog planet.
Mm.
And listening back to last week, our podcast last time, we were assuming that that comment meant that Aldani had somehow changed since Andor.
Mm-hmm.
I realized we went the wrong direction. That ship has been, the Skeleton Crew ship has been crashed for a long time.
Mm.
And that line shows that the last time SM-33 had any knowledge of that, it was a completely different atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So we went the wrong direction. So I really reevaluated that. Just that ship has been crashed for a very long time.
I think it would make sense just because...
Yes.
Athena, did you hear her?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you have to tune your ears. I get that. I think it would make sense because, as we will talk about, we see that some of these other planets that were hidden are not in good shape by any means.
Yes.
Compared to At-At.
I think what we see in episode 4 further supports this idea that everything that's gone on with this is a very distant past.
Mm-hmm.
But
almost like it was in a galaxy far, a long time ago, far, far away.
but then again, don't in episode 1 they make reference to the New Republic?
They do, yes.
So that's kind of confusing. I hope everything will be explained, but as of right now, it seems relatively inconsistent that this planet has seemingly been locked off for a very long time. Also is somehow in connection with the outside world?
Because they also didn't know about the war. The Galactic Imperial War.
Yeah. So what does the New Republic mean? Unless this planet has been locked up for so long that the quote New Republic is actually the Old Republic when it was new.
Well, did they call the credits Old Republic credits?
The pirates did. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, if we're right, if this is hypothetical, the equivalent of... It's like you took a bunch of people to an island, and the last thing they heard about was like the Declaration of Independence. They're like, yeah, that's fine. And
dude, that 200 means,
years have passed.
That means that like, okay, spoilers for a movie. Do you know the movie The Village, and the twist there? So the M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Village, the entire movie, you think it's like the 17th century. It's like this village,
mm-hmm.
per the title. The way everyone's dressed, the way everything, they're talking, there's no technology, no electricity, anything. You have no reason to think that it's not a few centuries in the past, other than at the end of the movie when a character leaves the village and stumbles across other people and they have a car. And it's very clearly, oh, it's the modern day and these people are like... weird Amish people who have chosen, and then you learn that they chose to
an hour and 48 minutes.
Actually, you know, under oftentimes derided film, I think is quite good. And obviously, I spoiled it a bit, but
it's got Bryce Dallas Howard, yeah, speaking of Star Wars
connection, yeah. And
continue.
My point is that would be what if At-Aten doesn't know anything since the Old Republic. That's kind of how they are. Like, they think it's a different year than it actually is. not oh, gosh. They're so shut off from everything. So I am curious to learn more. But another quick transition in. If it wasn't clear that this show was not already very 80s. Okay, so this is a song from the 80s. I'll play this for you real quick.
I think I know what you're going to talk about.
This is a song Major Tom by Peter Schilling. I don't want to get a copyright struck on YouTube, so I'm going to talk over it, but I want... you can look up this song. Very famous song. Here's the very famous part. Yeah, vaporwave, baby. And then...
Should not make babies out of vaporwave.
Vaporwave, baby. The official Star Wars Instagram posted this.
I saw that.
Oh, it muted. Okay, well, Instagram decided to stop working, so give me a second.
Yeah, is it Huttese?
It's the same song. It's Huttese, but someone online translated it, and it's describing the show Skeleton Crew. So it's not like they just took the words, but it is the exact same beat. It is Star Wars has done their own cover of an 80s song in Star Wars language. This is a really interesting marketing choice.
Well, that was one of my favorite things with Jedi Fallen Order. So they had the game soundtrack, and then they had
an entire
album of Star Wars in-world music.
Yeah. So this is a fun marketing thing, I think. And like if the 80s hook was not obvious enough, they've really and also what obviously listeners who can't see is they've done incredibly 80s like graphics. So they've not only brought this song, but they've brought 80s graphics into this video. It's obviously not like it's blurring the line between marketing and canon because it's in Huttese. Like this song, Huttese does not exist in our world. It's a Star Wars language.
It's kind of interesting how we've got Skeleton Crew, which is such an homage to 80s, and then Transformers 1.
Sure.
Which was, had also quite
a... Also Vaporwave.
We're just reliving the 80s, for which neither of us were alive for.
Yeah, that's true. And as if this episode was not 80s enough, we're going to talk about kids going to see a wise owl creature, which I can't point to a specific example, but that also feels 80s. I don't have any notes for the next episode, so I'll let you recap that one. But episode 3, pretty much, it starts with... back on at Atten, we see it just kind of recaps what we already know. We do learn that KD has lesbian mothers, presumably, and they're just not being allowed to go look for them. Like their parents, the three sets of parents. Wait, hold on. Why do we have three sets of parents, not four? Why are
I'm fairly certain Neil's mom was there.
Oh, she was. Mm-hmm. Okay,
you're just on your phone.
Taking notes.
We're 2 minutes into the show, Cameron.
Yeah, and I had to take a note.
So yes, all the parents were there, and they're like, "We need to go look for our kids." And the robots are like, "No."
Yeah. So that was pretty much all the beginning.
The robots said, "Cope."
And then the rest of the episode is pretty simple.
The kids end up escaping fully. They do go back and get the robot.
I'm sorry. The episode has like two distinct halves. That's the first half of the episode. The show kind of backtracks. Like they get. They're about to be able to escape, but they don't have SM-33 with them. So Jod, who we learn is known as Captain Silvo to the pirates. And it's going to be interesting to see what his actual name is, because later he goes by a different name to a different character. The kids refer to him as Jod because that's the name he gave to them. And he has to backtrack and go back in and get the robot. He has a conversation with one of his former crewmen who he tries to negotiate with him.
He's like, what are you doing out of your cell? And he was like, I think he said, he's like, why don't you sit down and we'll have a drink? And I don't think it was shown what Jod did to him.
Yeah. I
think it's implied that he shot him
that's right. This doesn't show.
Or they didn't.
Yeah, that's very strange that they just
there's
no conclusion to that scene.
The next time we see him is Jod in the teeny tiny little ferryman's hovercraft with SM-33 being chased by multiple other
Uh-huh.
Mini hovercraft. It's actually kind of funny because it's like bumper carts because they're not very fast.
Uh-huh.
They don't really have weapons. And you actually kind of see most of the chase through the background windshield of the ship as the kids are dialoguing.
Yes. Classic joke.
So
what? Just to backtrack to a second, the conversation between Jod and what I'm now realizing is one of the what I always refer to as one of the lettuce head creatures. These are not very prominent species, but there was always a very prominent shot of one of these species in the reaction shots in Phantom Menace. In the crowd of the pod race, and they look like they have a head made out of lettuce, so I just call them lettuce heads. And this whole conversation takes place in one long take, which stood out to me, and I really enjoyed on a cinematography level, just because there's not a lot of long takes in Star Wars. Because
Jod is maneuvering SM-33 onto like a hover table and moving, and the camera's like moving around him.
Yeah, the scene just ends. And it cuts to Jod piloting one of the little ferries, which I do love that shot because he's having to stick his head in the little cockpit where the ferryman has, like, the ferrymen are tiny, so he's having to, like, squeeze in there, which I enjoy. So I guess the implication is that that pirate decided to rat him out and it caused a chase. It feels like there's probably a scene cut out there.
No, there could have been.
So
they escape, before destroying... Really, like a bunch of ships, because they're still tied up to the fuel.
Oh, yeah. The line snaps and just whips through a bunch of stuff.
Destroys a bunch of ships. So they manage to escape and they hyperjump out of nowhere, or not out of nowhere.
Very unexpectedly.
Yeah. They
go to a moon base and meet an owl woman named Kim.
K-H.
Yeah.
Spell the most like Y-M-M?
Fantasy sci-fi way. Such a simple name.
She's like an owl cat.
Like if you never saw her name, you would think she has a very basic name. And if you never heard it, you'd think she has this crazy sci-fi name. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, Kim. And then you see it spelled in the captions. It's
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
It's like a French word. There are a bunch of unnecessary letters.
Well, speaking of French, that'll come up again later. I like this character design a lot. I think they did a good job of animating her in such a way that it seems like practical effects, but I think in a show that had to this point done such a good job having practical aliens, when they cut the close up of her and she's very clearly CGI, she just kind of clashes, because I think this one could have been done. She's not, obviously, it's easy for us to sit here and say it wouldn't be that complicated. I think when you compare her to the species they have had practical effects on, it seems pretty equivalent to those, because it's just the eyes. Like, her face is pretty simple. Obviously the flying sequences make sense to be CGI, but the close-ups, it could be one of the situations where they did do practical on set and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. That happens a lot. I understand, and it's good CGI. The performance is really strong. I actually am forgetting who plays her. But, and then pretty much she tries to help them find, she doesn't really like Jod, obviously.
No, and when they get up to the building, she calls him Crimson Jack.
Yeah, so it's another name.
My joke was we were going to get a new name for him every episode.
That would have been
good. Which was unfortunately broken this last episode. Yeah. But.
But what I did learn that Crimson Jack was an actual pirate in like the old like 80s Star Wars. So that is
I think I heard that too.
Character in universe that he has stolen the name from. Next, he's going to call himself Jabba the Hutt or Lando Calrissian. Confirmed. This Ezra. Is actually Ezra.
Oh no.
Ezra's consciousness split off whenever he went to the other universe.
But so before they land, because they're talking with each other, or before they get in, she calls the New Republic on them.
Yes.
So they're on their way, and so they come in, and it's basically like a library. It's like a less terrifying version of that library from Avatar The Last Airbender. You still have a weird owl library.
That's true.
But significantly less terrifying.
But she takes a very quick liking to the kids, because she actually believes the kids
She's like, why are you with him?
And so she's seemingly torn between not wanting to help Jod, but wanting to help the kids.
I think because she's wanting to get the kids away from him.
And also Jod primed them to not trust her.
Yes.
By saying she will stab us in the back, to set up the fact that if
she was doing what was probably the right thing, calling the cops, would make her seem like she was betraying them.
Yeah.
Because they also, they don't know the New Republic.
No.
They don't see X-Wings and think good guys.
No.
So they're smart enough. I think there's some good writing on the characters here that they're not dumb enough to completely trust Jod no matter what. They are very skeptical of him, but they're also too naive to know what to do any better. And also, due to the situation, they have no choice as well to like to go, because who else is going to get them back other than him?
Yeah.
So I like the situation. It doesn't, like, oftentimes situations like this feel like characters are being written to be stupider than they should be to make the plot happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the circumstances are nicely driving the character motivations, that everything they do makes sense. And so she managed to figure out potentially where their planet is by like looking for certain, like, gases or something.
So, what Kim says is, so they say they're from At-Aten, and as with every single other character, they're like, yeah, sure. And so they explain that they are from At-Aten, and she, says that the planets were hidden with very specific nebulous gases, which, narrowed it down from, like, to, like, 10,000 planets.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sees a symbol on Fern's back on her jacket.
Oh,
and it's
yes.
the two characters overlaid. And so using those overlaying characters, she's able to pinpoint it down. But, so she's going to get them the coordinates, but she's also trying to stall them as long as possible so the New Republic can get here.
Yes.
So they find out the New Republic is on their way. And
they rush the ship. And at this point, they pretty much force Jod to, like, tell them the truth about who he is. And he kind of does. And this kind of starts what's probably, so as of right now, my favorite ongoing part of the show, which is the tension between Jod and SM-33. Because they're, like, they're the same character almost, honestly.
Yeah.
But, like, SM-33 doesn't want anything other than just to, like, do the mission. Like,
I remember no At-Aten.
Like, he's a very simple man, SM-33, and Jod is obviously trying to swindle the whole situation to get money in the end. He seems to be just a treasure hunter.
A man of the people.
And so, they're kind of your two classic kinds of pirates. The one that just wants to, like, sail and is just a sailor, and one that's a treasure hunter. Mm-hmm. And them bumping up against each other is really, really good.
It's a good dynamic.
And the rest of the episode is pretty much just a chase, right? Where two children manning the cannons almost murder some people by shooting at the X-Wings.
X-Wings, which my guess was probably just like a game to them. If they've never had...
Oh, do you know what? That's a good point, actually.
Maybe not Fern. Fern, I think, was a little more like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Nim?
What's
his name? I'm so terrified. Wim?
Yes.
The way he was treated, that was like a game to him.
I don't think
he went in there and was like, these are lethal shots that will kill people.
You know,
I think he's like, oh, this is just like how they say in the story, you know, take down the ship.
That's the exact plot. No, I'm going to spoil something else that's really old. Ender's Game. They think that they're doing simulations fighting the aliens the whole time, and it turns out he was actually controlling actual ships and stuff. You know, his strategy included sacrificing a lot of soldiers to achieve his goal. So it's like, well, if they don't know that they're actually doing it, this fight also
the innocence of babes.
Well, I'm gonna make a point and then I'm gonna bridge the two episodes. One, my point is, scenes like this. I'll connect it back to the first episode. The first episode, there was a long sequence in my memory, long-ish sequence of. The two girls, Fern and KB?
Yes.
Just driving their bike. Like, Fern is driving and KB is in the sidecar and they're just, like, weaving in and out of traffic. And that in this, like, this chase scene in this episode between the ship. Do we have a name for the ship, by the way? Have they given any sort of name for the ship?
So.
I don't think so either. Between the pirate ship and the X-Wings... Those two really highlight that shows like this really think they can recapture the wonder of what visual effects did in the 70s and 80s when it was like really cool and unique to have these things on screen.
Mm-hmm.
While they like are technically incredibly well executed now, we're too used to them. And I'm especially thinking like the target audience for this is kids. Like this is trying to do for kids now what Star Wars did for kids in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But kids now are too used to this stuff. They've seen it so many times. And I think that is what has stuck out about the aliens. Anything with the aliens is super fun because those practical effects still can capture that wonder. Really originally...
We've spent like... Sorry.
What is really original designs on the aliens, them being real and like interacting with the characters. That's fun. CGI, chase scenes. Like, yeah, in the 80s, that was cool and exciting. Like, honestly, to this day, weirdly, like, the second scene of Back to the Future where he's just like driving around town on his skateboard is for some reason still incredibly well remembered. But a scene like from the first episode where they're driving around on their speeder bike, if you show that someone in the 80s, obviously it blows their mind. But for us as adults now and even kids now, I don't think it registers as anything. So we're spending time on something that I feel like is trying to inspire awe and wonder. But it just comes away being kind of, I don't know, my eyes gloss over for scenes like this, in my opinion, because they're just not that interesting. You're going to say something.
Interesting. Because when I saw that, I just thought it was a situation of, he's like, hey, kids, do this. And they don't know any better. So for them, it's awe and wonder. They're like, we're flying through space and we're shooting guns. This is so super
cool. I'm not thinking
about
the characters. I'm thinking about the audience.
Okay.
Think about
I wasn't thinking about the audience. I was just like, oh, these kids are committing crimes.
No, I do want to talk about that, but that'll bridge into the next episode. But yeah, just my point about on the audience side of things is I feel like a lot of modern stuff like this will spend lots of time showing us things that are theoretically really amazing to look at, but are not. I think what the difference now is you need an incredible level of creativity for these things to feel
new. We need real
new
spaciships. Real spaceship chases.
I mean, that
chases
would be great. It's, I mean, that's the whole reason Tom Cruise wants to make a movie in space, like in the upper atmosphere. So just like, it sucks because I know that the digital artists work really, really hard on these things and they are doing a great job, but it doesn't like... In the end, it doesn't really accomplish anything. Like, it's not like, you know, people oftentimes, all the, like for example, the, like, almost any space battle in the original trilogy is super memorable and amazing to watch. And I don't know what the huge, I don't know if it's because back then they had a lot of, what's the word? I'm going to totally drop this word. The word is necessity. Necessity drives creativity. And I think that was the difference, is it was hard. It was really, really hard to make those in the 80s. The technology is not this as easy as far as the knowledge and the time, but like...
If you're semi-talented with a good rendering service, except for the people who made Galvatron's Revenge. We don't talk about them.
Sure. Like, it doesn't feel like this... Many, many people can do this. And... It's unfortunate. And then the other unfortunate thing is sometimes these things will be practical. Like, I remember when we watched
LLM.
Yeah, the Industrial Light and Magic documentary. They showed that there was some, like, practical stuff in The Mandalorian, like, with spaceships.
First two episodes were great.
And it's really hard to tell now the difference between CGI and practical effects. Mm-hmm. So it makes practical effects, if it's not like really obvious that it's practical, it makes like, if especially if they take a practical effect and put it in a CGI environment, the practical thing is kind of lost. I'm kind of rambling. My big point is I just really wish they would not spend time on things that used to work. It sounds like, it feels like they're just trying, they're pushing a boulder up a hill. And it's just going to keep falling down on them. I don't know what the answer is. I think these things go too big. Like, this chase scene is almost too big for this show. Like,
really? I didn't think it lasted all that long.
Not time. Like, I don't think children should be shooting at what is a... Like, imagine if there was a scene in The Goonies where they got in an artillery anti-air turret and shot at, like... military aircraft. Like, it would be totally out of whack with the rest. Now, I know it's called Star Wars, but like, this isn't even compare. I feel like I'm realizing this is kind of a recreation of the great scene from New Hope when Luke and Han jump in the turrets of the Millennium Falcon and shoot the TIE fighters. I can't quite put my thumb on why that is great and this is boring to me. I guess is what I'm getting at. Mm. And like, even like, there's something special about Rey driving her speeder bike around at the beginning of Force Awakens, and I do not care about watching Fern and KB drive their speeder bike around at the beginning. I can't quite put my thumb on it. I don't know if it's music. Music might be a big difference. John Williams' score on both of those things I just mentioned really, really heighten. Rey's theme really heightens all of Rey's scenes in Force Awakens. The incredible TIE fighter attack scene score in Attack of the, in New Hope. So that could be the difference. That could be it. That could be the only thing. But anyways, to bridge episode 4, talking about, I really liked your idea of that Fern sees as a video game. A big theme of episode 4 is Neil talking about there's like no conflict, no like physical contact, no war on their planet. That maybe highlights that Wim doesn't have a concept of
that's
like
what
death.
I was gonna say. I'm like, Wim, like the second that chair comes down, Wim is grinning from ear to ear. Yeah. Like it's a game.
And also all of the law enforcement on his planet are robots.
Yeah, they're not.
He might
people think
that they're piloted by robot, the X-Wings. Yeah, that's really
like,
interesting.
It's, it's a robot ship that I got told to shoot at. So yeah, so they do end up escaping. The New Republic pilots land, and there's some like slight back and forth between them and Kim, and it just kind of ends. But she's like, I think she says, I know where they're going. Oh no, he asks where they're going, and she goes, you wouldn't believe it if I said it, and like looks to the stars, and then it ends.
Can you
ends.
Imagine if someone did that to you in real life? Like, that's such a movie thing to say. If you'd be like, what do you mean?
Like, just tell me where they're going. I'll Google Maps it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so we get to the fourth episode where it starts off pretty quickly where they are approaching a planet with a similar cloud bank that we see on at Atten, and the robot because the reason they know where it is because Kim was downloading the coordinates basically onto like an SD card.
Yep.
And
like a big floppy disk
because
the 80s technology.
And so they steal it, and those are the coordinates. Well, they take it and they go to this planet, very similar, and they land.
Looks, the characters keep saying it looks just like home.
Yes.
But it's very desolate. It's very like post-apocalyptic looking.
But they lock into an automatic landing, like autopilot.
Which is one of two things, in my opinion. It's either the ship has been to this planet before, which we actually later figure out is true, and it has, it just like goes into it, because SM is able to lock it out, or it's something on the planet.
My thought was, if it has a barrier just like the other planets, it's just a thing. Because they say no ships come in and out. So if there's a barrier that controls ship traffic.
But as we see this planet, there's like no technology that we see. So if there's something still functioning on this planet that would be able to do that, unless the barrier itself is like being off, I guess that would be technology. So there's something in the planet still functioning. I don't think it's going to end up mattering in the end, but...
But the thing that's important about this planet is they land and it's all foggy, so you don't really have a good idea of what you're looking at. And so the kids go off to explore, and Jod is going to follow, and they order SM-33 to babysit Jod, so you kind of get some interesting back
and forth. That's literally what they say is babysit. Yeah. Like, come on the ship, baby.
Yeah. And so the kids start exploring, and they land by, like, it's a playset. Not a playset. It's a playground. Yeah. You look at it, and you're like, well, this is weird. I joked that they've transcended universes, and they're on Earth.
Yeah.
In, like, Chernobyl. But so they, as they kind of keep exploring, the sun clears a little bit, and they're kind of, like, in the ruins of a plaza, and they find a house, and it's the... It's the exact same architecture that's on Atten, but it's all destroyed. It's all just totally run down. So they end up encountering a couple of kids who are like armed and armored. And these kids are like, what flag do you carry? Sorry, she's eating her dinner.
Yeah.
they're like, what flag do you carry or whatever? And they're like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. They have no idea what means. And so the kids end up hiding. Thank you for interrupting me.
You want to hear it again?
No.
I can play it again.
No. So they hide, and the lead kid, whose name I can't remember.
Fern? No. Wim.
No, the French kid.
Oh, the French guy. I don't care enough to have them down.
She has them hide, and a group of men in, or like people in vehicles march by, and they're like armed. They're also armored. And so you have like the Green Clan and the Red Clan. That's how they're kind of differentiated. Mm-hmm. But the red ones are called the Hatons. But we see a clip with, I think it's Smee, because obviously Smee's memory has been wiped. So we're like, why? But he makes, I don't think the kids hear it. I think they're already gone. But Smee says, yeah, we're on at Akron, mm-hmm. which is not at Atten.
You can tell by the fact that they're not the same name.
Yes. So now it's kind of like, so this is not at Atten, which explains why it's essentially destroyed. But why? Why are mm-hmm. they here and all that? So the kids take the main, this child takes the main kids back to her clan. And it's a little weird. It's very weird. Because their clan leader, they're talking about.
Hi, Athena. Good munchies?
I think I just watched her eat a piece of thread off the floor. I don't like that. They meet the clan and they think they're going to be in trouble. And then the leader goes, we value our children and their strength. Which means they essentially, and it says, we train our children to be helpful. So they train their children to be soldiers.
Yep.
And they're like, we value our children. And so they're like, you're going to help us. And if you're strong enough, we'll take you to, what did they call it? The inner...
The like hidden sanctum, the hidden or the fallen sanctum?
Yeah, it's very Jedi. It's like, yeah. And so like, if you're strong enough, we'll take you there. And so these poor kids get wrapped up into starting to learn how to shoot guns and train weapons. We get a POV shift back to Jod. Mm-hmm. And Jod is snooping around the ship and he finds Wim's lunch money. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's literally lunch money. It's an allowance. His little gold stuff. And Smee is like, you're a thief! And so we get more bickering. Jod steps out and the fog clears, and then we see the ship is surrounded by the other clan.
And this is the only time we see them for the whole episode, the other clan.
Yeah, for the rest of the episode.
Which feels like, and we'll talk about this in a second, feels like something was majorly cut out.
Yeah. So they, maybe after they saw what happened with the Acolyte, they cut a lot of stuff. But so, the funniest line in the entire, like, if you, this is, probably one of the funniest things, I think, in Star Wars. He comes down, and then he's surrounded, and they have their weapons drawn on Jod, and he just raises his arms and goes, you know what? Just shoot me. It's so... And the delivery...
I'm mixed on that, because it, one, doesn't make a ton of sense to me, and also doesn't quite feel in alignment with typical Star Wars humor. I don't know. It feels a little like... A little too, like, almost, like, late millennial. Just, like, the joke about wanting to die. I don't know. Like, I think the only... Like, Jude Law can deliver almost any line and make it work. But it's a bit out of place, in my opinion.
I thought it was funny.
Well, that's the beautiful thing about podcasts. To having two different podcasters, we can have different opinions.
So, anyways, I thought it was very funny. I think it was just the exasperation of probably what this character has felt for four episodes of being run around by children and now being babysat by the droid.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't see him for a while. We go back to the kids and the leader's daughter. I don't know her name. She has a French accent, very heavy French accent.
Either way, she's a bad actress, but either she is French and she's a terrible actress, or she's an American actress or a different from a different country doing a very terrible French accent. It's kind of hard to know.
Really, really. And because the thing is that her father did not have nearly as strong of an accent.
Correct. If he had all. Somewhat of an accent, but nowhere, yeah, nowhere near this.
So she kind of takes a liking to Neil. They kind of start talking. She shows them around the town, and she's like, so we're going to go fight the Hutans because we raid each other. Like, they're like clans. It's like Clash of Clans.
She's from... Athena, cut this out.
You're kidding me.
Not at all.
So she's not actually French.
No. So she's just a bad actress.
Which side?
You didn't hear the name. She's from a major American city near us.
And not the coasts. wow. Okay. Ooh, yikes. Okay. Not yikes. It's just kind of like that's an interesting voice choice that they had her do.
Interesting is very generous.
Yeah. So... she kind of takes a liking to Neil, and she kind of shows him around, and she explains they're going to go raid the Hutans later because they stole their livestock. I don't remember what animals they are, but they steal the livestock. And so Neil is like, well, if I hurt someone, I would just say I'm sorry. And so you kind of have this interesting, you kind of have this dialogue set where the leader's daughter's like, well, we fight, we're strong. And Neil is like, we have no fighting on our planet. She's like, I think he said, why don't you just apologize and like make peace? Because he does make a distinction. He goes, if you keep going back and forth, it's never going to end. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how much it like changes her per se, but she's listened. So we get a bit of a cut and the leader goes, you kids have done a great job training for the last 30 minutes. We're going on a raid. And we're putting you at the literal front lines. So they go out to raid wherever. As they go through like these areas, you see how it's essentially a copycat city of Atten. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely decimated. So they take these kids and they hold them at gunpoint. And they say, you're going to go lead the charge, basically. So the four kids go out, they're leading the charge, and someone comes out of the fog on the other side. It's like a big city street. You're kind of like, obviously, one side behind a bunch of debris and shelter, and you're like, so there's probably an army on the other side of the fog.
Another connection. I'm sorry, I'm so blown away by this. I just found out who does Neil's body performance. Mm-hmm. She has one fact on her IMDb. Well, okay, first off, she is a adult little person. Oh. A graduate of in our city.
Are you going to cut that out?
Yes, I will.
No way! Is that wild?
That is nuts!
That's super cool.
So...
okay, I think that explains why Neil has such
a strong... we got to get her on the pod.
I feel like that's why Neil has such a strong performance.
Well, the voice is a young man.
Oh, okay.
The voice is a young man... who I think does a great job. And it makes a lot of sense that you would not have the same person doing the body performance, because why would you?
Yet they couldn't hire the appropriate actors for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
That's a whole other thing.
And they'd rather CG them.
Yeah. Mm,
anyways, yeah, I'm not going into that.
So, but it is one interesting that it's a woman. And it's two interesting that it's she's
super cool.
She not I don't know if she's from here. But she went to school here.
Super cool. So it's building up to the fact that you're thinking, oh my gosh, we can see these kids just absolutely killed on the front line. You know, show over, ba-da-da, skeleton crew becomes literal. And then you see a shape in the fog, and from the other side comes Jod. Mm-hmm. And he goes, yep. I think these are yours. And the herd of livestock that were stolen is returned. And so it's kind of like, huh, okay. The leader of the other clan is like, wow, thank you. We'll give you our best hides. What do you want? And he's like, I just want those four kids. And he's like, really? He's like, just give me the four kids.
Couple notes here real quick. One, why what was the name of the group that kidnapped or like kind of took in our main heroes?
I don't know if we got a name.
Well, I thought you said it a minute ago.
The red ones were the Hutans.
And that was the bad guys.
Yeah. Bad.
Yeah, yeah. The other side. Okay, well, the group that took our heroes, they don't know that Jod knows these kids and came here with them.
Yeah.
So when he asked for them,
yeah,
for everything they know, this is just a guy asking for the kids children. With them. And they are totally okay with it. Major moment.
Yeah. But they've also had other discussions I was going to touch on, because he's like, we'll give you our best hides, like animal hides. But they said earlier that they trade with off-worlders.
Yes.
So
which is very odd.
This planet is not exactly hidden per se. And it has contact with the outside world. And we actually see, we made a note of this. They wear very militaristic? Yes, militaristic helmets. And then you take a look, they're Imperial helmets.
Yes.
They're not stormtroopers or anything, but they are like the foot trooper helmets. So, the Empire has been there. Or tried to go there and got wiped out by these local clans. Mm-hmm. Or two, they were there and then just left all... I would say left all their stuff when they got by the Republic, you know. So there's like that aspect as well. So it's not necessarily hidden. But yeah, I thought that too, where he goes, I want the four kids. And they went, okay. Like, what if he was a predator?
Yeah.
Like, that's just...
My other note was, I think that is an incredibly unsatisfying conclusion, in the sense of...
I feel like we got a lot cut.
Yeah. I mean, I think I like the idea that Jod was able to just negotiate with those people, but he did have a absolute crap ton of money.
Yeah.
So it's easy to do.
He stole Wim's lunch money, which... Okay. I really want to know, because as we'll probably talk about again, as we've talked about, obviously... These are old Republic credits that Wim is carting around. They're like gold. We even see Jod bite one, like the way you do real gold metal, to be like, mm-hmm. Is that real?
Yeah.
And so obviously it's worth a lot. It's probably like a situation where it's like $1 on Atten, but like anywhere else, it's like $600 per little credit bar. But so obviously we did ask, like, how did he do that? And it's like, oh, well, he had Wim's money. And he says, he's like, I just gave him a couple old Republic credits. And Wim is upset with this. And it's not really touched on again, because I think Jod was like, well, I mean, I would give up my lunch money if it meant we didn't have to walk into the front lines personally, but I'm just built different.
But another reason I felt like this reveal was unsatisfying is I thought they were setting up something that was kind of fun, which was that the other side was forcing... Jod to do the same thing that this side was forcing the kids to do.
I thought that too.
And that they were going to like work together to negotiate peace between the two sides.
Or they were going to escape while the sides just duked it out.
But ultimately the lesson was, as is always, in the real world, money solves everything if you have enough of it. So like ultimately this half of the episode comes into the thud for me. Really the only thing worthwhile in this first episode, the first half of this episode was... that the French girl keeps doing very unnecessary gymnastics. She does slides and flips that are totally uncalled for, and it's hilarious.
The not French girl.
Yeah, the American French girl, exactly.
So they do get taken to the hidden sanctum, which is basically just like the tower that you can see on Atten where the supervisor lives, which we have yet to see the supervisor.
Or like be really explained what that means. Yes. Also... teasing that, because the first thing they see when they get on the planet is a statue with the helmet with the head removed. So they're very, hiding someone's identity.
Very Stalin. Like very.
It's going to be brutal. Neil. It's Neil's dad.
Gosh. Oh, no.
He is a blue elephant man.
It's Jod.
That would be something.
That would actually be insane. Anyway, but how old is that man? So they get to the inner sanctum and they're taken up. And so they come to... a circular room that's really kind of empty and blown out, but there are like six pillars and they brush off the dust. There's so much dust in this film or in this
yeah,
set.
I didn't think about that. I didn't talk about it last time. I did not notice it until I rewatched it, but I didn't notice it this episode, but at least in the first two episodes, every time they exited or entered hyperspace, a bunch of dust came off the ship, which is a great visual.
So they wipe the dust off and they realize, oh my gosh, these are coordinates to Acheron. And they go to the next one. These are coordinates to six different plants with the name At. They get to the last one and they go, we found the one for Atten. And of course the coordinates are scratched out.
My initial reaction, and I don't think there's any way of knowing this, it looked like to me that it had been sliced off with a lightsaber. It obviously could have been torn off by SM-33.
So, continue, sorry.
I just like, if I'm correct in that reaction, mm-hmm. they're setting up something interesting. Mm-hmm.
Could be.
There's no evidence though, so.
Which, my theory, I'll get to that in a bit. So as we come to find out, SM-33 has been here before, and we found him on Atten. And so they ask him, and every time he goes, I can't say I remember no, you know, can't say I remember no at Atten.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do a pirate accent. I thought about it and I just quit.
So you did a southern accent?
No,
instead?
I didn't. Well, I didn't mean to. But it's like, I can't say I remember. Yeah. And so, Fern goes, as your captain, I order you to memory wipe and tell us why you were forced to forget at Atten.
Yeah.
So he does it. Mm-hmm. And then he starts to reveal that his former captain, who is still kind of nameless, came here and found the coordinates to at Atten and then murdered all the other crewmates and forced SM-33 to destroy the coordinates so no one would follow. What I thought was, because it's a very clear kind of like tube mark, it was like the circles on his arms that he like hit it.
Sure,
and it, because
sure.
It's a very, it's a cylindrical cut.
That makes way
cut.
More sense. So, yeah.
And so he says that and he goes, and I think he says, and if anyone were to ask, I'm supposed to kill him or something. That's what's implied. And he starts to get extremely aggressive. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
he goes, what I did not realize, because we did not see him. Maybe we did. Do we see him go into battle mode in episode 2, or was he already in that mode? I think he was, because like he gets taller and his arms get longer.
He did not change a whole lot in episode 2 outside of like his weapons. Just
well, I think he did, but we didn't see the change.
Maybe you're right.
This episode, we see the change. I think I agree. It did not seem like he changed that much, but once you see him do it, you realize how much taller he gets,
yeah.
How much longer his arms
get. Kind of like a K2SO.
He's got a very similar body to K2SO, mm-hmm. absolutely. Man, I love anything with SM. He's such a good droid, and this is a great scene.
And so he's like, my captain told me to kill him. And so he kind of starts
tear them limb from limb. He's just repeating this. Limb from limb.
And so he kind of goes after the kids, and then Neil distracts him, and he starts to go after Neil. Poor Neil. And Jod runs up behind him and turns off his off switch.
No, I think it was Fern, I thought.
No, it was Jod.
Was it really?
Yes. Jod hits him in the back and basically like shuts SM-33 down, and Jod says, always go for the off switch. Hold on.
Is he trying to catch a bug?
I am.
That's good podcast content, trying to just sitting quietly.
Ooh, I got it.
Good job. You know, actually, that reminds me, I was using this recorder that we used to podcast with earlier this week.
Holy crap, I obliterated
that. And sometimes the battery can be kind of loose, and so I wanted to test it, and I just smashed the table, and it made the recorder power off, so... That was a risky move you just did there without knowing it.
I'm really good at killing gnats. I'm kind of worried that they're in one of my plants.
Uh-oh. So then the SM like shuts off right as he's about to like
kill
Neil, and he powers off like looming over him, and then Neil collapses. And this is actually a very nice payoff for this episode, which was Neil and French girl. Kind of arguing back and forth between the merits of like bravery and mm-hmm. kindness, and both having, I think, a really interesting respect for one another, but also kind of standing firm in what they believe.
Yeah.
But Fern, not Fern, Wim, ah, oh, dang it. Sorry. The names are all mm-hmm. like these one syllable names. Neil did show some bravery here, which mm-hmm. I quite liked. It was I think the first half of this episode is pretty nothing. The second half, I love. I think whenever you have the whole crew together doing pirate stuff, I love it.
I forgot we get kind of like a nice scene between Fern and Wim. Like after they find out. Oh, can I get through it, Cameron?
I am letting you talk. I didn't say anything.
Cameron mute is like,
it's an audio format. I disagree, but I want to let you talk.
Well, I think it's some growth that we just hadn't gotten yet.
On whose part?
First of all, Fern and Wim haven't really interacted one-on-one really this entire time. They've always been in the group
mm-hmm.
aspect. But so it's after they find out the coordinates are literally wiped out. for At Atten, and she really gets upset. Like, and honestly, a way that most 14-year-old, like, there's still children. She gets really upset and teary-eyed, mm-hmm. and she kind of runs off. And Wim follows her. And so she's very upset, and so she's just kind of, like, kind of moping. And she's yeah. like, she tells Wim, she's like, you should have been captain. And Wim's like, no. I mean, do I think it was the best dialogue interaction? No. But I think it was, just kind of just a little bit nice to see a bit of a different side than just Fern being tough, independent.
I guess it's just such an obvious thing to do. Like, the character when she first shows up is so obviously putting up a front of being the cool, mm-hmm. rebellious girl. To have this very dramatic, emotional moment, it just... One, you're writing a scene that I don't think the actors can pull off. I think that's a fundamental flaw when you, as a director, to give two actors who are pretty fresh, who don't have a lot of emotional range, to try to give them something that, if not done well, just comes off as cheesy. I think I agree with you on a theoretical level that it is theoretically good to see more different sides of characters, but it's just such an obvious different side. Like, these characters who have fought the whole time, now they're both kind of emotionally distraught, and one's going to try to comfort the other. What I don't like is her reaction to him, which is him trying to comfort her, and she says you'll figure something out. Wim says you'll figure something out, and
Wim's not very good at being emotionally supportive.
Fern says, you can't just say you're amazing and I figure something out. I'm not a robot. I won't do what you want me to do.
Oh, yes.
And that response makes no sense to me.
It leads into her realizing she can command SM-33 even despite the memory wipe.
So the scene abruptly cuts off the emotional element mm-hmm. and goes straight back into plot. Yeah. And I just don't think it transitions well. I think it cuts itself off before there's a chance to have some actual emotion there. And... these actors, I just feel like these actors are giving such totally different performances that they don't, when you put them just one-on-one like that, I guess that's maybe why I love Jod and SM so much together, because they are giving calibrated performances mm-hmm. that bounce off each other well.
I feel like they have good group chemistry.
I agree. When the whole group's there, I think it's a lot of fun. I think once you start breaking anyone off from the group other than the two adults in the room, it starts to get faulty. And I did, thinking about this today, I was thinking about how much I enjoyed episode 2. Mm. And I started thinking about how other shows follow that same dynamic, the same pattern. I think most Star Wars, at least seasons, tend to have one great episode and then a variety of quality there outside of that. Mm. Like, Ahsoka has the one great episode with the...
you mean the hyperspace
show? The world between worlds, and then the whales. Mm, that episode is incredible. Everything else is kind of hit or miss.
We haven't hit Bryce Dallas Howard's yet.
Episode that she directed. Yet. Yeah, this episode, by the way, directed by the two men who directed the film Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is quite cool. I don't feel like their particular style really got to... shine through very well. I hope they direct another episode.
Jod Freeware, all at once.
Very good.
Thank you.
You just named the podcast episode thing.
Oh, no.
I was saying, Ahsoka has that one episode. Kenobi has the last episode where Vader and Anakin, Vader and Obi-Wan
Andor
fight.
Has all the episodes.
Yeah, Andor's obviously an exception. On its own scale, Andor... The one 10, way out episode.
10 and 12.
Yeah, like, it does have some stand-up, mm-hmm. but that is just as some as transcendent episodes among great episodes.
It's kind of one of the... That's so funny, because it's one of those things where you get through episode 10, and you're like, oh my gosh, it can't get better than this. And it does.
Yeah. Bad Batch Season 2 had that one great episode with Cody and Crosshair.
Bad Batch having one great episode.
And everything outside of that was just kind of okay.
I even think the finale of season 1 was pretty good with the end of Kamino.
Yes, that was the only episode I really liked.
Season 3.
I don't know if season 3 even has any great episodes.
I would say Rebels season 2 has some stellar...
Yeah, this is not like exclusive. It's just most of the shows. Like, the good shows are good. Are consistently good. Mm-hmm. It's like the rest of them tend to have like one really great episode and then whatever.
Mandalorian
so what, I guess what
three.
I'm saying is I hope this is not a pattern. I hope episode two is not the only good episode.
Oh,
thoroughly good episode.
I feel like they've kind of stacked their directors for the second half.
Sure. But yeah, that's all the notes I have. Do you have any?
Not really, but now there's more questions than answers, which is fine. I'm not saying that in a negative way at all, but it's like, so there were multiple hidden planets. At least one of them is in absolute, like, it's like post-apocalyptic, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, all these questions are like, so At-Aten is still hidden. How are we going to get to At-Aten? Why is it hidden? And what is there? I guess that's the why. But like, how? You know, there's a lot of questions. So
I agree. Cool. I do look forward to, we're halfway through now.
I know.
Four more episodes. And it's going to be an exciting finish, I think. But it's longer than a minute. I have zero, so it's definitely shorter than a minute for me. Do you have anything?
I do. I got a couple. I have... Oh my gosh, we forgot one of a big piece of news, which I'll talk about in one of the memes.
Okay.
Hold on. I have to Google it so I can get it right. This is true, because you're going to be like, are you sure? When I tell you the news. Okay, so. This has this first image, not related to the news, just has like no dialogue, no caption for context. It's one of the early scenes in Andor where Luthen, Stellan Skarsgård, is all dressed up in his little shop. It's the end of one of the episodes where he's just like laughing maniacally, and it pans out and you see him with all his goodies in the show. And do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so it's this, but it's Luthen surrounded with every single cute animal from Star Wars.
That's good. That's really good. I like it.
So you have the Porgs and Babu Freak.
Are you going to sit here and list every single one on that image?
I'm giving an example.
Okay.
You got like the foxes from The Last Jedi, the Ewoks, the little things from Ahsoka. You have Neil. So it's recent. You have Neil. You have Nubs from the Jedi.
You are listing every single one on there.
First of all, there's only 10.
You told me you're giving examples. You're listing every single one.
I think
one.
My favorite is that Sai Snoodles is in the background.
Very good.
Which is just kind of interesting. So it's good quality. Mwah, I love it. You know, collecting all the cute animals that come along.
I love it. That's a good meme. That's fun.
This might be a little aged poorly with just how rapper culture is right now, but it's the Drake meme where he's like, nah, and then the pointing. So it's SM33. I just want to call him Smee the whole time.
Uh-huh.
Jedi, spelled the normal way. Jedi with A-Y-E as an I.
Jedi.
Yeah.
That's fun.
You are on the council, but we do not give you the rank of Godzilla. And nice. It's the scene of them denying Anakin the rank of master. And it's all the good Godzillas, and then a Zilla from 1998 in the middle is Anakin.
Good stuff. This is concerning. This reaction is concerning to me.
This is based off a Facebook template. So for one way, you're going to laugh, react, and the other way, you're going to mad react for whichever decision you want to make. Sorry, it makes me laugh. Quick, you're a member of King Solomon's royal court. Help him decide how to evenly split a baby.
There's a lot of layers to this one. Wow, that's good. I'll let you explain it. That's good.
So for context, King Solomon, king of Israel.
I don't think you need to explain that much.
Had two women come to him fighting over a baby. And Solomon said, well, let's cut it in half. And one woman, so each get half. And one woman, for some insane reason, was like, yeah, let's do that. And the other one was like, no, please don't do that. So that's how he decided who the real mother was.
Little moral lesson here in the middle of the minute.
Don't cut babies in half. Like, kind of a wild take.
Mm-hmm.
So help him decide how to evenly split a baby. Your two options are... with Facebook reactions, the laugh and the angry, but under the laugh reaction, it's like through counting, is a Jazz from the first Transformers movie who is ripped in half at the waist, like hamburger style. And then you have Cliff Jumper from the Bumblebee movie who's cut in half like hot dog style.
Very good. And then I'll... it's fun. What else you got?
Okay, so this is a piece of news I totally forgot. So I had to confirm this because someone told me this and I was like, you're literally just pulling my chain. So a bunch of news came out that Jeremy Allen White is joining The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Oh, jeez, I forgot about this.
And he is cast as Rada the Hutt.
Yeah, so Jeremy Allen White, most famous right now for being the lead actor in The Bear.
The Bear, the cooking show. And first of all, I really don't know how to feel about this. Rada the Hutt is Jabba the Hutt's son, who was in the first clone, like the original Clone Wars movie, because that's who Anakin and Ahsoka
They
called him Stinky. So that is the context behind this. I genuinely do not know how I feel about that, because just the clips I've seen of Jeremy Allen White, I cannot make the connection between that and however the heck he's going to play a Hutt.
Well, it's just bizarre to cast famous actor as the voice of a Hutt, because they don't even speak English. So I don't even know what the point is.
So anyways.
Oh, dear Lord. That's the worst thing I've ever seen.
Jeremy Allen White photoshopped and merged into Rada the Hutt's tiny little body.
It's pretty much just Jeremy Allen White's head with little hands coming out of his neck, and his neck is like this looks like a Jabba the Hutt body. Awful. Though, have you seen the image of the buff Hutt?
No.
This is a canonical. There are lots of different body types of Hutts. I'm gonna find it. Someone posted this thing. Oh gosh, I had not seen this. Okay, here is one image.
Oh my god.
Isn't that awful? But like this is him laying back feels even worse. It's just a Hutt, but he's got muscles. Like it's rather than like, I feel like Jabba's oftentimes like reclining like on his side. This guy's like reclining on his back and like is showing his abs. It's really terrible. So this is probably what Stinky's gonna look like.
Jabba the gym rat.
What else you got?
Have you seen the chill guy memes?
I don't know. Okay, I have to see it.
Let me pull up the base. It's rather new, so I know you're not always on the internet.
Oh, yeah. I have seen this. Okay, thank you. Yes, he looks like an Arthur character to me.
He does, but he's not.
He's like it's like an anthropomorphic like dog.
With his hands in his
dressed
pocket.
Very 90s, whitewashed jeans. A very simple sweater with his hands in his pocket, giving this little sly smile.
When Jazz is getting ripped in half, but you're just a chill guy, and they've like photoshopped Optimus.
But they photoshopped Optimus Prime's head on him in only over his eyes, but it's like cutting off his nose. That's good. That's good. That's a good meme.
It's low effort, and I didn't make it, so... You can see I didn't edit it very well. You can see where I cut out the sound noise from Instagram. And that's it.
That's it. Well, thank you everyone for joining us this week. This might be our shortest episode ever. I don't know. It'll be close.
Let's find a way to lengthen it.
No, I'm good. As always, thank you to Caleb Jacoby for our intro and outro music.
Jacoby.
Props to Rachel for our artwork as well as running our Twitter account.
Props to Cameron for our Facebook and our Instagram, which means he gets sent the same exact memes on both accounts.
Thank you to Athena for editing. She's got a work cut out for her today, having to censor two different identifying pieces
please,
of information.
Athena, please don't let Cameron dox us.
Give us something to read on the pod. Leave a review. Tweet your DMs, opinions, or memes. We're always open to it.
This is Cameron and Rachel signing off saying, personally, we would not give four children to the random man that just showed up with our livestock.
This is a personal opinion. This is our opinion.
I know this is a hot take.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
This is Cameron and Rachel signing off saying, you have two pills. In the blue pill, you live in the normal universe with a normal accent. And you take the red pill, you get to live in Star Wars, but you have to have a French accent. Choose wisely.
She said something similar at the end of us watching yesterday, and it wasn't that funny then, and it's not that funny now.
Cameron, when he gets to repeat jokes, but I don't get to...